All right, we are in Perek Tes, chapter 9. We may even finish the Perek today. Wait and see. This is, again, the aftermath of Gideon. Abimelech, Gideon's son through his concubine, has ordered the murder of his 70 half-brothers in order that he should be able to lead. He got the people of Shechem to go along with him in this. He said, it's better for me to lead you than all these children of Gideon. He was cursed by his brother, surviving brother, Yotam, who put a curse on him and on the people of Shechem for selecting such a leader. We have the whole parable of the trees, Mashal Ha'ilanot. And following that, Yotam disappears. He doesn't reemerge in the story at all. But then we're told about a fellow by the name of Gaal. You see, Abimelech is not so friendly. Abimelech, despite his statement that you'll do well when I am your leader, is not such a good leader. And we're told here that Hashem puts a spirit of animosity between Abimelech and the people of Shechem. They start to resent him. They're angry at him. And so they put ambushes. They lay an ambush in the mountains for Abimelech and his people. And the result is Abimelech doesn't go into that area. His people do. They get attacked. News gets back to Abimelech, who doesn't do anything about it. The people are ecstatic. They think they've gotten rid of Abimelech. And they throw a big party. They press their graves. This is the first time in a while, apparently, because Abimelech's been ruling them for 3 years. And they've been afraid to go out into their vineyards. So they press the grapes, they make wine, they have their party, and at the party there's a fellow by the name of Gaal ben Ebed, who seems to be an outsider of sorts. We don't know really enough about him. He may not even be Jewish, but he is clearly an opportunist. He comes into town, he sees what's going on, and he says, yeah, that Abimelech is really terrible, and I'm going to lead you against Abimelech. And he even throws out a challenge. He says, let Abimelech increase his forces and come out to fight with me. I'm going to put a stop to this tyrant Abimelech. And we have that line that we explain in different ways. Mi Abimelech u mi Shechem. Who is Abimelech and who is Shechem? Which we explain to mean either we are the people of Shechem, and who is Abimelech to us? Why should he rule over us? He isn't one of us, or he isn't worthy of us. Or alternatively, it's a reference to Shechem, as in Shechem and Hamor from back in the Chumash. And what he's saying is, he shouldn't rule us just like Shechem. Either Shechem is ancient history, and Abimelech, why should I have Abimelech rule us? He's as relevant as that guy from long ago. Or alternatively, he's only the son of a leader. Abimelech is the son of Gideon. That's what gets him the throne. You may as well take Shechem, who's the son of Hamor, and make him your leader. You don't pick somebody because of who his parents were. You pick him for himself. And so he issues this challenge to Abimelech. Either it's a general declaration to the heir, right? I dare Abimelech, but Abimelech is not in the room. Or Zevul, Abimelech's governor, actually is present. His mayor, whoever he is present, and he's saying to him, go tell your master what I just said. So that brought us to Perek Tes Pasuk Lamed, chapter 9, sentence 30. There are certain questions here that I can't figure out answers to yet. One question that bothers me is, what is this insistence that we still have? We saw it in Abarbanel, that Abimelech is a shofet. And simultaneously, we say that all the shoftim are righteous. That's what Abarbanel has said. All the shoftim are good guys, and Abimelech is a shofet. And he said, don't worry about the fact that he killed his brothers, because that was before he became a shofet. I mean, he doesn't seem to be any better now.
It was in order to become.
That was it. Yeah, that's how he got the throne. But also, it didn't, so what? He's not any better now. It seems like what Abarbanel wants to do is to sustain the idea that there was always a shofet. There's continuity. And if you don't have a shofet in this period, then you have a gap. He doesn't like that idea. He wants to see how there are shoftim down the line, in which case Abimelech has to be one. But I'm not clear on why that's such a big issue for him. Why did he have to have a shofet at all times?
But he's a self-made shofet. He's not one chosen by God or where.
See, no, the people of Shechem have chosen him. I mean, he made them an offer and they said yes.
But the others had sort of got on their side, no?
And so it appears, and he certainly, and, we don't
know,
think
Giron
does.
The people didn't come to Giron and say, Shofet,
right.
God sent him a message, or...
regional anyway.
Right.
So there wasn't a Shofet, we don't know.
There
was a Shoftim everywhere, all the time.
Right. But Abarbanel seems to assume that we know who the Shoftim were. In other words, the Shoftim are the people we list in the Sefer. There isn't another Shofet off in Naphtali somewhere who we just don't know about.
Right.
It has to be part of his overall theory of how leadership works, but I don't know exactly what he's doing with this. Now, maybe I'll email Eric Lowy and see what he says.
His brothers, and then he... changed his ways, and now he's good?
The problem is he's not good.
Yeah. They're just not holding this against him because
right.
it was done before.
So how, right.
But he has other things. Like, he's not good afterwards.
Not good.
I mean, we're going to see terrible things from him. It's also a separate question that I don't know exactly what to do with, but it's interesting to see the contrast between the good guys and the bad guys in these prakim, in that the good guys act alone and the bad guys have an entourage. Right, Gidon is himself. Right, when first he has his experience with the Malach Navi, whatever that is. Eventually, he has his group of 300 men who go with him to war after he pares down the rest of the army. But he's very much like on his own. Yotam also on his own versus Avimelech, who has all of his group when he approaches Shechem. And versus Gal, who has Echav, he has all of his brothers, allies, whatever that he brings with him. I'm not sure whether it's trying to say something or not, but I think it's interesting to see the lone ranger sort of righteous one versus the bad guy who has his posse, you know, to work with him.
Yeah, well, but that's how it happens. Like the bullies, they have a group.
Right.
You know, when they're on their own, they're not right. they're not so brave.
Right.
Whereas people who we who we see as brave, and they're
right.
often a leader by right. themselves.
Could be. Okay, so we're up to Pasuk Lamed, and here Gaal is going to find out that issuing challenges isn't always a good idea. It sounds good when you're saying it, you know, like at the party. I'm sure he felt really good about himself, but it's south from there. Pasuk Lamed, sentence 30. And we're going to read straight through from Lamed to basically to Mem Aleph, because that's the story. Vayishma Zvul Sar Ha'ir as Divrei Gaal ben Oved Vayichar Apo. Zvul, who is the mayor under the control of Avimelech, hears what Gaal has said, and he is angry. And again, either he isn't at the party, but he hears about it, or he hears because he's standing there. And he sent messengers to Avimelech in a Tarma. Tarma is assumed to be a place. There is the possibility, the Dat Mikra offers the possibility that it actually means cleverly. In stealth. Right. Right, try saying that word. The Rashi also renders it that way, that it's done in secret, presumably because they have their ambushes out on the roads. Right? How is he going to get a message to Avimelech? So the answer must be that he sent it as a trick. He sent it in some way that he wouldn't be detected.
Well, what would he be doing at the party anyway? How would he, like, isn't he the enemy? Why would he be allowed into the party?
Yeah, and I think that's probably why most of the Mefarshim don't side with Rashi. Mm-hmm. You know, the assumption is, no, we don't invite him when we're yeah. rebelling as his boss. So... he's very angry. He sends messages to Avimelech in a place called Tarma, or alternatively, stealthily, Lemur, saying, yeah, I gotta work on that word. Hinei, Gaal ben Eved ve'echav ba'im Shechema. Gaal and his entourage have come to Shechem. Vihinam tsarim es ha'ir alecha. And they have set up the city as a siege against you. Ve'ata, and now, Kum Laila Atave Ha'am Asher Itach. Get up at night, he says, you and your forces. Ve'erov Basadeh, and set up an ambush in the field. Ve'ayava Boker, and it'll be in the morning, Kizroa HaShemesh, when the sun shines, Tashkim, you'll get up, or get up early, Ufashatita Al Ha'ir, and then you'll spread out against the city. Gal and his allies will go out to you, and you will do to him as your hand finds meaning. Then you'll be able to wage your war against him. That's the opening of the story. Just language wise, the language that's used at the end of Pasuk Lamed Aleph is strange. Hinam tsarim es ha'ir alecha. What does it mean to be tsar a city? Right, it means to lay a siege. They're laying a siege to their own city. What is that?
Not letting people in.
So the usual way that this is taken is that they're defending the city against you. In other words, I think I actually wrote it on the sheet. Yeah, take a look at source number two. We'll come back to number one. Radak says it. He says, "Kamoshi yikare matzor kishet sarim esayir mibachutz v'lo yuchal adam latzeis mimena." It's called a matzor, a siege. When you besiege a city from the outside and no one can leave, kein nikra matzor kishet sarim esayir shalo yikaneis adam ba mibachutz. So too, we call it that when no one can get in. Because keep in mind, the word matzor isn't in and of itself a word connoting a siege as much as it's a lack of traffic. Tsar is something that's very narrow. We've squeezed it. Yes. So no one is able to get out because they don't want anybody getting. No one is able to get in because they don't want Abimelech and his crew to make it in. So he says, he sends off his message saying, "Here's your strategy. You come outside the city at night. They won't see you. Then they leave the city in the morning, just because they have to go out to the fields or wherever they're going to go. And at that point, you'll be able to attack." Straightforward. Good, reasonable plan, we think.
Only attacking on the few that are going out.
Well, except that at that point,
they're pretty much all staying inside the city.
Unless at that point you can get in, because the defenses are down as people leave.
Right. Okay.
That's an additional possibility.
But
so,
this
yeah.
man is a good guy. He's justified in what he's doing.
Who is good?
The mayor.
Zvul? Oh. He's just a lackey. I mean, he works for Abimelech. Is he good?
No.
I mean, if he's working for Abimelech, I'm not a friend of his, you know. Abimelech is a bad guy. Why is he working for Abimelech? We have no backstory on it.
No, but if he was a good guy, he didn't have to tell Abimelech what happened.
You know, he could have used this as an opportunity to undermine Abimelech, and then potentially, though, get hurt. Remember, one of the things we saw in Gideon's story, is the fear that political fortunes change. Remember, they didn't want to help Gideon, because what happens if Midian comes back, right? So maybe he's thinking to himself, yeah, I better stick with my current job rather than try to switch sides and potentially get hurt. At the very least, he's not dead, meaning Gal and his friends have not attacked Zvul. Points in his favor. Okay, Pasuk Lamed Dalet, sentence 34. Let's see what happens. Vayakam Avimelech v'chalam asher yimo laila. So Avimelech and crew get up at night. Vayeirvu al Shechem arba'a rashim. And they set up an ambush against Shechem from four different sides. In other words, they surround the city. Or they have four different branches to their forces. Vayeitze Gal ben Eved v'amod pesach shar ha'ir. Well, Gal, sure enough, comes out to the entrance of the city in the morning. Vayakam Avimelech v'ha'am asher ito min ha'ma'arav. And Avimelech and crew come up out of the ambush. Vayar Gal es ha'am. And Gal says, sees this massing of forces in the distance. Vayomer el Zavul, and he turns to Zavul, and he says, Hinei am yored meroshei ha'arim. There's people out there. I see masses of people coming down from the mountains. So Vayomer Elav Zavul, no. It's a trick of the shadow.
I mean,
it looks like
Zavul. Why is Zavul? I guess he is in the city. Zavul might be inside, and then yeah.
Zavul apparently is inside the city. So that's a good question. There's more to ask about as we go through this. There's a lot we have to understand about just the mechanics of this. We may need the fruit and everything to line this up. So he says, oh no, it's the shadows. Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Vayosef od Gal ledaber. Gal keeps talking. Vayomer, and he says, Hine am your din me'im tabur ha'aretz. He says, No. I see people coming down out of the hills, coming from tabur ha'aretz. What does that refer to? Literally, right, the navel. So Rashi says, place of strength, meaning the mountain. Radak says it's the center of the area. Either think of it centered geographically or center of gravity type thing.
Does Tabor mean navel, though?
Yeah, that's why we use the word. So, Veroshachad Bami Derech. So, Veroshachad Bami Derech Elon Me'onanim. And not only that, I see another branch coming from this place called Elon Me'onanim. The Elon, again, we saw before, could be the plains or could be the type of tree. But there's a particular area there. He says, I see a branch of people coming from there. Vayomer elav Zivul. So Zivul says to him, Ayei efo ficha. Where is your mouth now? Asher tomar mi Avimelech ki na avdenu. You said, who is this Avimelech guy that we should serve him? Halo zeha amasher ma'asta bo. These are the people that you said, they're nothing. Say not, tavi lachan bo. Go ahead. Have fun. Go fight. Vayetze Gal lifnei Baalei Shechem. So Gal goes out in front of Baalei Shechem. Vayilachem b'Avimelech. He goes to war. Vayirdefeu Avimelech. Vayonas mipanav. Avimelech pursues him. Gal runs away. Vayiblu chalalim rabim ad Pesach ha-sha'ar. And many, many people die, going all the way back to the gates of the city. Vayeshev Avimelech baruma. Avimelech stays in the city called Ruma, or Aruma. This may be Tarma that was mentioned before. If Tarma was a city before, it's the same place. But he doesn't go to live in Shechem. Vayigarish Zvul es Gal ves Echav Mishav es Bishchem. And Zvul, for his part, gets rid of Gal and his entourage. So Gal's done.
He doesn't kill him, he just kills him.
Well, evicts him from the city. But he's done. I mean, there is no more Gal in this story. There are a couple of things that we need to understand here. First of all, did Avimelech stick with the plan?
No, because he was there. He was supposed to be in the field with his four people. Were supposed to come out, and they were supposed to.
Yeah,
do it, there.
It looks like he, for some reason, jumped the gun, and Gal is watching from inside the city. Is what it sounds like, and yet, then you have to ask the other question, which is,
why did he leave the city?
Why in the world has Gal come out?
Why did he leave a fortified city? Why didn't he stay inside the city?
Right.
That's the question.
Why in the world does Gal go fight with him?
I have a question further back. Why is Avimelech going out to fight them when other people threatened him before? The Ethagot Yotam was his name?
Yeah.
He comes out and threatens him too, and he just lets him be. Why does he care about
Yotam? Yotam was a random curse, and then he ran away.
Well, who's this guy?
These guys are
fortifying the whole city.
Have fortified the city. They have ambushes against him in the hills.
He's like, uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, Yotam, once and done, he's gone. Gal is a threat.
But that's when Zvul says to him, he kind of goaded him on. You see, you know, he got him to leave the city.
Right, so part of it may be psychological warfare here. Like, what happened to you, you big talker?
Yeah, look what you said. Because
that always works on males.
You got to go beat him now.
Yeah.
You know.
But what does he say? No, they're mountains, they're shadows, don't worry about it. And then 2 minutes later, go, it's him, go fight. I changed my mind. They're really people.
Right. So we need to understand what Zvul is doing with the It's a Shadow game, because that's also part of this. The simple read is he wants Gal to be taken unaware.
Yeah.
Right? That's a simple read. Like, you know, let him not know until the last minute that there are armies here. And then, you know, he won't have a chance to think things through in terms of his reaction and so on. Radak seems to think that he's actually making fun of him. Take a look at source number one now. Radak says, Sachak bo, he laughed at him. Va'amar lo derech lag, he says to him in the manner of mockery, Einam anashim, these aren't people. Tzeh laharim, yid melechaka anashim. It's just shadows, they look like men, but he's doing it to make fun of him. In other words, you said you're fine and you can defend yourself and so on. Oh, don't worry about that. That's just shadows. That isn't like armies, many more armies than you have at your disposal. It's actually a joke. Malvin has an entirely different read of this, as we'll see, you know, shortly. But there are basically two approaches that I'm going to present to how this attack worked. The conventional read, which Radak and others bring, is that the what happens is they arrange the defenses of the city. This is the siege that I referenced in number two. And the way he leads the story, apparently, is that Gaul came out of the city when it said back in, what was the sentence? When it said in Lamed Hay, right, in sentence 35, Vayitzei Gaal ben Ebed ve'amod Pesach Shar Ha'ir, he went out. As far as he's concerned, the Gaal actually came out of the city in that sentence. You know, it's not that you had to lure Gaal out of the city. Gaal is already outside.
He's right by the edge. Pesach Shar, right? He's right. He stood at the entrance.
But the way that he reads it is that Gaal's already outside. He doesn't realize he's in danger. He's out for, you know, routine purposes, whatever it is. And that's that. That's the way that Radak reads the story. Malvim's read is more creative.
Except that if he's right there, he's just come out, and the people are far away, far enough away that you can't tell if they're shadows or people, that doesn't give him enough time to run back.
Doesn't give him enough time to go back in.
To go back in. Someone's coming. Get back in the fortified city.
I guess he's far enough out of the city that he can't do it. Or maybe that's part of the psychological game of goading him along.
Maybe it was dusk. What time of day was it?
Oh, this is morning.
It's morning. Early in the morning.
For sure. Shadows from the mountains? Yeah.
You ever call the sun at 3 in the morning?
So this is one read. Radak's read is that Gaal is unaware, and Radak says that that Zebul is playing along with it. He wants to have, you know, Gaal out of the city as long as possible, and Gaal has already had left the city on his own. Malvim says that's not what's going on. First of all, Malvim says it's not a siege of the city. Take a look at number three. He says, Hodiu ki hiskimu beinayim latzeis lamachar baboker latzur al ir aruma. When it says in the sentence that we read before in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, they are laying a siege on the city against you, it means they're going to attack the city where you are. In aruma, they're going on the offensive, was the idea. Zebul sends a message to Avimelech saying, you're not safe where you are right now. Which addresses the question of why he attacks, because he wants to head off this assault on his base. So he says to him, "Here's what you do: Ya'atz bechokma sheyakum balayla v'yerav aleihem basadeh." He gives him this wise advice. He says, "Get up at night and lay ambush for them in the field, because they're all going to be leaving Shechem in order to get to Aruma. Uvaboker hashkem yivshod dalir Shechem, and then in the morning you can go attack the city of Shechem, ki gal v'anshei achayil yotzim elech letarmah, because all his warriors are going to be leaving the city to go to you. V'lo yiv ba'ir, they won't be in the city. Uvakal techbosh yaseir, and you can conquer Shechem easily." So it's not the way we first thought, which is Avimelech make an assault on the city in the morning, and you'll catch Gal outside of the city. Rather, it's Gal is leaving the city. When he's out of the city because he thinks he's come to attack you, you can come in and invade and take Shechem. And then he'll be cut off from being able to get back to his base. However, Gaal messes up the ambush. Because take a look again at the language in Lamed Hey. Vayitzei Gaal ben Eved, he leaves the city, Vayamod Pesach Shar Ha'ir, but he stands by the gate. They don't go to the city of Aruma or Torma, whatever name we're going to put on this city. And so Malvim writes in number four, he says, V'chein haya, so it happened. G'shegal yatsa man shei Shechem balos ha-shachar lechaz ha-Torma. Gal, along with the men of Shechem, go out at first light to go to Torma. Avol lo halach tekef, they didn't go right away. Rak amadim anashov v'pesach shar ha'ir l'sader machanehu. He first stands by the city to get everything in order, get everybody in their proper lines, whatever it is he has to do. And during that time, come Avimelech min ha-ma'arav. Avimelech comes out of the ambush. He didn't know Gaal was still there. He didn't realize that Gaal and his troops were still there at the city. So Gaal says, uh-oh, I see armies coming out of the mountains. Vayidei Kain lo hisrachek min hashar, which is why he didn't leave the gate. So now you have a problem. Right? You laid this ambush. Zavul had advised him to come down to the city while Gaal is out. But Gaal isn't out. Gaal is standing right there. So what does he do? So Uzvul Ratzalat Osam Shut Seal HaHarim. He wants to fool Gaal into thinking, oh no, these are just shadows, and therefore you can go to war and not stay in the city. But that doesn't work, because Gaal realizes these are warriors. So at that point, Zvul falls back on psychological warfare. And that's number 5 in the Malbim. At that point, Zvul tries to get him out of the city by setting in his heart the fire of victory. Amarle, he said to him, first of all, Im tashuv le'ir tielavuz. If you come back to the city, it's going to be a disgrace for you. Ki aye efo ficha, because where's your mouth now? A person of stature has to fulfill his words. You know, if you want to be taken seriously, Gaal, you go to war. And then second, these are the people you degraded. You said they're like nothing. So why are you afraid to go to war? That's the way that Malbim reads the strategy. And so that's what happens. Gaal goes to war against Avimelech, whichever way I read the attack, whether I read it the Radak's way, which is that he caught Gaal out of the city, or whether I read it in Malbim's way, which is that Gaal is about to attack him and then you know, ends up being stuck with this attack that he really doesn't want. He thought he was going to catch Avimelech. He was going to catch Avimelech unawares, and he didn't succeed. This is terrible, because in the stories I like to find a hero and like someone I want to root for, and I'm rooting for nobody here.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the point. I mean, that's the point of the story, is that they're all terrible, right? The phrase "a pox on both their houses" comes to mind. So,
and the people of Shul decided they're not Jewish. We don't know if they're
Jewish. Well, we don't know if they're
Jewish. Wanted to get rid of Avimelech for whatever reason. He didn't succeed, but not
for the
rebels. But not, yeah, he wants, because he's a rabble rouser. He wants it for himself.
That's the thing. It's not really clear what his motives are.
Oh, I think it's greed. Yeah. That's the way I read it.
Laura wants the visual.
Can you do a visual? I'm not kidding.
Here's your city.
It's oranges. It's oranges.
Who are we according to?
Either way, this is the city according to everybody. Okay, this is Shechem. Okay, the mountains over here. The plan is supposed to be according to Radak. Okay,
let's do the mountains here, and those will be the people.
Okay, fine. Okay,
just
seriously.
Visual.
According to the way that Radak reads it. The thought is, let's get ourselves in place before morning, right? So we're in place before morning, and then they're going to come out in the morning just because they come out in the morning. That's what happens. They go to their fields, they go do whatever they have to do. They're going to, you know, harvest from the vineyards to have another party, whatever the purpose is. And at that point, you'll come up out of the ambush and you'll attack. That's what's supposed to happen. And he comes out of the city. And at that point, he sees them coming down. That's what Radak says. And at that point, he's, you know, potentially going to come back. So, therefore, you have Zavul there to encourage him to stay out and fight. It's a straightforward read. According to Malbim's read, they actually think that Gaal and crew are going to come out and attack here. And so the idea is, get yourself out of the city. Then he's going to come out to attack. And at that point, you get the city. You don't go for Gaal. You go for the city. And once the city is done, then you can take care of Gaal. The assumption is that Gaal and his forces are not going to be able to take Tarma in your absence. Otherwise, you just flip cities. That's the assumption. But what doesn't happen is he doesn't go. He's still here working on his forces, and then he sees them. And so at that point, Zavul has to goad him into going to war. The whole plot is gone at this point. The whole plan is gone. Now they're just going to fight a regular, plain old fight. Okay. So the big question, though, in my mind now is, after this is over, you beat him, why doesn't Avimelech go to live in Shechem?
You know, can we just go back a minute? Why do we think that God just came out in the morning? He already said, you know, we're against Avimelech.
Yeah.
Maybe he came out deliberately to attack, but he wasn't expecting Avimelech to know.
That's what Malbim thought.
He was going to surprise him.
Right. The problem is how you translate the sentence that says they are besieging the city against you. Radak says that means they are defending this city against Avimelech. Malbim says it means they're going to besiege your city of Tarma or Aruma against you.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. You're offering Malbim's read.
Yeah, right,
it's, that's where the whole question begins, is what city is under this matzor, under this siege? And that's what will determine the way you read the rest of the story.
But if Tarma is not a city...
Well, Tarma is, but there's definitely a city called Aruma in it. The only question is what Tarma is.
Wherever Avimelech was.
Right. He's in a city that is called Aruma. At one point, it might also be called Tarma. So, why doesn't Avimelech live in Shechem? The simple answer is it wasn't his base. His base was Aruma, or Tarma, or whatever you want to call it. However, the other answer would be because Gaal is still in the city after the military victory. Because look at the order in the sentence.
In Shechem, right?
Oh,
in Shechem,
first
correct.
He settled there. And
right,
then
if you look at the order of things in the Pasuk, it says in Pasuk Memalek, Vayeshev Avimelech Baruma. Right? Avimelech goes to live in Aruma, Vayigarish Zavul Es Gaal. Read that sequentially. Right? Read that as a sequence. The answer is, then he got rid of Gaal and his entourage from Shechem afterwards, and that leads to a question. So how did you get Gaal out of the city?
With his normal day to just get up and go to the fields. That's what you explained before.
No, but no, not in the war. After the war.
Oh.
In other words, Gaal's been defeated. He's routed. I don't think he's walking out of the city, you know, just to go out to the fields at this point. So the question is, how in the world does he get him out? So Rav Bach says, take a look at source number 6. He offers you two explanations. Abarbanel doesn't believe that this is a sequence. Abarbanel says he locked Gaal out when he went out to do battle. And this isn't this pasuk is not a sequence of events. But the way Rav Bach reads it is that it is. And he says it was a reaction. Yidmeh, it appears, Sha'asa ze bechokhma gam im son e Avimelech. He says Zavul worked with the enemies of Avimelech. Meaning Zavul is an employee of Avimelech. Right? You have in the city a lot of people who don't like Avimelech. However, at this point they also don't like Gaal. Because Gaal led them into a failed war. So he aligns himself with the people who didn't like his boss. They don't like Avimelech. But they also don't like Gaal. He says, look what he brought upon you. And that's how Zvul manages to get Gaal out of the city. He says to everybody, we'd be better off without Gaal here. That's one approach. Alternatively, he says, oh, hayazeh im yadanim shachim avimelech meir shchem. Alternatively, he did it with those who had followed Avimelech and Shchem. It wasn't as though the city was 100% Gaal's city. Zvul had backers. So maybe that's how he got rid of him. Okay. At this point, God's plan is well on its way. Right? Avimelech has enemies in Shechem. Shechem has aroused the wrath of Avimelech. And remember what the plan was, as we saw last week, exactly as Yotam said, for each one to destroy the other. Let fire come forth from Shechem and consume Avimelech. Let fire come forth from Avimelech and consume Shechem. That's the plan, and that's exactly where things are headed at this point.
So did he take over Shechem? He took over. He conquered Shechem after this?
So, who conquered Shechem?
Meaning he comes. He gets rid of Gaal. Well, what's with the people? Sorry. What's with the people of Shechem right now? Not Shechem.
I'm getting
confused. No, you do mean Shechem.
No, where is Gaal?
Gaal was in Shechem.
So, what happens to Shechem now? Did he overcome it? Did he take it over?
Who's he? Avimelech. So Avimelech has not destroyed Shechem. Avimelech has not conquered Shechem.
He
defeated Gaal's forces. And Gaal either returns to Shechem and then gets kicked out by Zavul, or alternatively, he was locked out after the war. But either way, Shechem currently has within it a population that doesn't like Avimelech, possibly a population that does like Abimelech and Zebul.
And
that's what's in it. But don't even bother, because it isn't going to last long. So here we go. Pasuk Membet. And here we'll read Membet to Memtet, 42 to 49. We're flying now. Vahimi Malcharas. And it was the next day. The very next day, like after this is over and Gaal is out. So the next day, Vayitzei Ha'am HaSadeh. The people go out to the field. Meaning, why are they going out to the field? What does that demonstrate?
They weren't afraid anymore.
They're not afraid. They assume it's all over.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Avimelech got rid of Gaal, so the war is over. Well, news comes to Avimelech that the Shechemites have left their city. So he takes his group. The word, it's tricky. The word Am is used in different ways in different psukim here, but this is his set of forces. Divides them up into three groups. I don't know why three now versus four before. They laid an ambush in the field. They saw the people come out of the city. So he attacks the people of Shechem. Avimelech and the Rashim that are with him. Whether that just means his one Rosh that he has with him, or whether it means actually, according to, I think, Abarbanel, it means the leaders, the leaders who were with him, in which case the word Rashim is being used in two ways in this sequence. Once it's a group of armies, and the other time it's just the leaders. But anyway, Pashtu, they went forth, Vayamdu Pesach Shar Ha'ir, and they went to the entrance to the city, Ushnei HaRashim, and the other two groups, Pashtu Al Kol Asher Basadeh Vayakum, they got everybody in the field. So in other words, let's make sure this visual is clear. Here's your city of Shechem. Here are your three groups that are attacking. One group goes to the city itself, that's Avimelech's group, HaRashim HaSherimo, and the other two attack those who have left the city, who are out in the fields. Clear?
Except it says, they told the next day that the nation went out into the fields, and they told Avimelech. So they're already out there.
Yes.
And then he goes, let's go hide in the fields and ambush them. But they're already in the fields.
So presumably, you have one of two explanations, right? Mm-hmm. Either he finds out the next day that the people think that they're safe and they're leaving the city to go out into the fields.
Going to go.
That this is what they would do. And so he goes the next day or the day after that. That's one possibility. Alternatively, he gets word from his spies that people are starting to leave the city. He lays an ambush, waiting for the rest of them to leave the city. Now, there are people who go early, there are people who go later. Waits until there's a significant number outside the city, because look, he deploys 2/3 of his forces in the field.
So he thinks a lot of people are there.
Yeah.
Aren't these also people from Shem? Aren't his men people from Shem?
The backers, like,
maybe they're from Arumah. Maybe they're people who have left Shem and aren't interested in Shem anymore. I don't know. But look what happens. The Avimelech Nilcham Ba'ir, Avimelech fought the city, Kol Hayom Ahu, the full day. Vayakodes Ha'ir conquered the city, Ve'ez Ha'amasher Baharag kills everybody inside. Vayitotzes Ha'ir, he demolishes the city, Vayizra'eh HaMelech, and he sowed it with salt. That was the reference I made on Tuesday in the Ezra Shir, the sowing it with salt. Correct. So
that's terrible.
Yeah. Like, why? Why did he do this? Gaal is gone. What in the world is possessing Abimelech to do this?
Because he's an evil person.
He's a bad man.
He's afraid of others who are going to rise up like Gaal.
Maybe. Maybe.
He's a vengeance against the first time, right? Why? Mm-hmm. Why does he have to kill all these other people as well?
Right. So that's part of what you have to ask here. What's going on?
Did they support Gaal? Or he wanted to conquer, he wanted to rule over Shechem.
But there's no one there.
But he was there. He was there.
He does not want to rule over Shechem.
Well,
how do you know he doesn't want to rule over Shechem?
There's nothing to rule over anymore.
He just demolished the city and he planted it with salt. Sowing it with salt guarantees nothing's going to grow.
Because they had resisted him.
No? Right, but now there's nothing to... It's a ruin now.
Yeah.
It's a ruin. And not only that, we're not done. Pasuk Mevav. Sentence 46. Vayishmeu kol ba'alei Migdal Shechem. The people who are living in Migdal Shechem, the fortress of Shechem, which we assume is some kind of a nearby area, They hear Vayavo el Tsiriach Beit El Brit, and they come to Tsiriach Beit El Brit. That's a hard one to translate. There are a few different approaches to it. Rashi says that Tsiriach is a forest. That's near their house of worship for this god of theirs. Da Mikra and others say the whole thing is a reference to the temple of their god. Some suggest that it's a fortress. They have a citadel over there. Okay, it's some kind of it's some kind of a fortress where they believe that they're going to be safe, or they're going to try to be safe. So they tell Avimelech that all the people of Migdal Shechem have gotten together, and Avimelech says, great. Vayal Avimelech Har Salmon. Avimelech goes up to Har Salmon, which is somewhere near Har Gerizim, according to Da Mikra, just based on the context. Hu v'chola amasherito, it's him with his entire group. Vayikach Avimelech asakar dumos biyado, and he takes axes in his hand. Vayichros sochas eitzim, and he cuts down a bunch of branches. Vayisaya, then he takes the branches that he has brought from Har Salmon. Vayisaya vayasem al shichmo, and he carried them on his shoulder. Vayomer el ha'amasherimo, and he says to the rest of his guys, Mara isem asisi, maro asu kamoni. He says, what I just did, what you saw me do, now you guys do that too. So you cut some wood also and bring it with you. Vayechrasu gam kol ha'am ish socho. So each one cuts down branches. Vayechu achar Avimelech, they follow Avimelech. Vayesimu al hatzriach, and they put it on this citadel, whatever this is. Vayatzisu alehem es hatzriach ba'ish, and they burn down the fortress. And all of the people of Migdal Shechem die, like 1,000 of them, men and women. Everybody dies within this fortress.
So first he saw them, like
Shechem,
and then he
demolishes the fortress. You got it. Burns down the fortress. Yes. And this is the guy who we want to defend as being the righteous. Show me. Like, I don't understand what Abarbanel is doing. I have to find out. A couple of notes here. First of all, this is not only Abimelech's character. Presumably this is part of that ruach ra'ah that we talked about, this spirit of animosity and hatred that is incited among them, because he's not, this isn't just about preventing future revolts, he's destroying his tax base. Mm-hmm. Right? Everything is now gone. It also, though, sets up Abimelech as the anti-Gidon. In the sense that, first we established that because he wanted power. Gideon was offered power and declined either entirely or partially, whereas Abimelech goes pursuing it. But also, Gideon was brutal to our enemies. He was brutal to us. Now, the truth is, you also have a story with Gideon and the Migdal Penuel, right? The fortress in Penuel, when they hadn't supported him and they had sided with Midian against him. But at least there, they had sided with somebody else, and there was some reason to do so. This is just cold. The people don't realize it, right? They don't realize that Abimelech still wants blood. They think Gaal is gone. Now we'll be okay. But it doesn't work that way. I think also in the story of Migdal Shechem, there's part of a general polemic that we've seen elsewhere in the book, which is that fortresses don't help. You think that you can build fortresses and then you don't need Hashem. You can just do what you want. And throughout the book, we find it's basically every time you see a fortress, you know it's going to be destroyed. It's like a cue, you know? Okay, war is going to come. I want to take a look Shoftim wide and see if I can say that definitively, that all the Migdalim and Shoftim end up being destroyed. But certainly that is a general theme within Torah, not to rely on the fortresses. And by the way, this was some fortress. I brought it for you on the sheet. I retyped it just to have, this was interesting. Number 7 on your sheet. When we talk about this fortress, Professor Eli Tzur in the Dot Mikra edition has a note on the fortress. He says, Hayazeh, Kfi Shemalamdoda Hafirot, Binyan Eitan Sha'ovi Kirotav Kachamisha Metrim. He says, based on the excavations that have been done, it seems like this was a strong structure with walls about 5 meters thick.
Wow.
I mean, that's serious. The Upischona.
To burn something like that.
No, it's not. Upischona sun ben shnei bachanim chazakim, and its entrance is between two strong watchtowers. This is a serious word. Like, you understand why they thought this was going to be a good place to go. The he must have brought a lot of wood in order to do that. Okay. Sorry, why didn't they use stone? 5 meters worth? Either that, or you know what? The truth of the matter is, maybe that's the answer for one of the Mefarshim. One of the commentators on this, I forget which one, I think it was Abarbanel, describes the death of the people in this Migdal as being from smoke inhalation. Or maybe they're burning the wood that's outside the city, that all of them piled up outside the city, and the smoke is what's killing them. It's entirely possible that the Migdal doesn't burn.
But if they excavated and found it, then clearly it was...
Well, they didn't excavate this one in particular. They excavated fortresses in the area, and based on that, they know the uniform kind of structure that they had. I don't know how you would know that this was that particular one. So it really could be that that was the idea of the parish that said it was either a Barbanel or a Ralbag that said they died of smoke, because maybe it didn't burn. Maybe that was the point of all the wood. Okay. Well, we're not done. There's still one person in this story who's alive. Right? Meaning Shem is all gone. Well, Yotam's going to survive the story. We don't know anything about Yotam. But Abimelech...
I thought you'd come back.
What about Abimelech? So, Pasuk Nun. Vayelech Abimelech el Teves. Abimelech ain't done. He goes to the city of Teves. Vayichan b'Teves vayokidah. And he camps in Teves, and he conquers Teves as well. Why did he attack Teves? So, Ralbag assumes they were part of the plot with Shem. Presumably this is a nearby town that was also part of the revolt. Otherwise, this makes no sense. Okay. Umigdal Oz. Haya Besoch Ha'ir. Here goes another one. There was a mighty Migdal in this city too. Vayanusu Shama Kal Ha'anashim V'Hanashim. And all the men and women go there. V'chol Ba'alei Ha'ir. And all of the leaders of the city. We talked about Ba'alei Shem as leaders in Shem. So Ba'alei Ha'ir, the leaders of Teves. Vayisgiru Ba'adam. And they closed up the fortress for them. Vayalu Al Gag Ha'Migdal. And they all go up to the roof. Okay. But here the story changes. Vayavo Avimelech ad ha-migdal, vayilachem bo. Avimelech goes to the Migdal, he fights against it. Vayigash ad pesach ha-migdal aserfo. Vayesh, he wants to try the trick again. Goes to the gate of the city, he wants to burn the fortress. Again, whether that means he's going to burn the fortress or burn around the fortress, I don't know.
It worked before.
Vatashlech isha achas pelach rechev al rosh Avimelech. The way they would use a mill in those days when you ground up grain was you had two circles. You've seen it, I'm sure, in touring. Right? The two circle stones. You have the lower one called the shechev, and then the upper one called the rechev. And the upper one has some kind of protruding stick or whatever it is, beam. And then the animals, usually animals, but I guess it could be a human being if you didn't have it, you need a lot of people, would push the upper circle around, and then the grain that's between the lower one and the lower disc and the upper disc gets crushed between them. That's the way you do it. So she takes a piece from this upper millstone. Someone had to have smashed off a piece in order for this to happen. But she takes a piece and she throws it from the top down on the head of Abimelech. So maybe a Migdal isn't all bad. Vataritz es gul galto, and crushed his skull. So Abimelech is not dead. He got a very hard head. He calls to the youth who is his arms bearer. And he says to him, Shloch harbacha, draw your sword, umosiseni, and take my life. Pen yomruli, isha haragasu, lest people say that a woman was the one who did it. Vayid kireyu nara, vayamos. And the kid says, okay. Yeah, and he stabs him and he dies. Maybe you should have asked him for a medic instead. I don't know. Before we hit to Pasuk Nun Hey. Just in terms of this business with the millstone, the Medrash Tanchuma here has a great point. I think the Medrash is bothered by a question, which is, why do we care how he died? Do I really need this story about the millstone, or is the millstone teaching me something? Is there something I'm supposed to learn here?
Well, maybe the woman who did it.
Well, that's true. You want to mention that we have this whole Devorah story, so you know that we're on a tear. My first thought with it was that this is Skila, right? Death by stoning, literally. The only explicit cases in the Chumash where a person gets stoned to death, the only two cases are Avodah Zarah and Arayos. Those are the two cases for which the Torah says there's a punishment of Skila. There are other cases. I mean, the only two laws, right? The Mekoshei Shitzim is, but there you don't get the Torah saying explicitly that this is a punishment for when the Torah presents punishments.
Sinned with something with a millstone, therefore he's punished with something.
That's right. Good. Hang on. Yeah. Right. So we're going to come back to that. It's a good point. Just hold the thought.
Of the salt of
I just think that the idea here of the. Of this punishment makes sense in the sense that this whole thing came from Midian originally, and the Jews becoming like Midian. And so the punishment for Midian, whose sins are specifically Avodah Zarah and Arayos, immorality, is this Skila. And it comes upon Avimelech, who had become such a Midianite. The whole discussion that we had about the splintering of the people as caused by Midian, and so on. But the second approach goes back to actually what Ora said. Medrash Tanchuma picks it up in source number 8. Amar le'Kadosh Baruch Hu l'Avimelech ben Gidon. God says to Avimelech ben Gidon. This is a medrash in Parshas Vayera. Remember that Avimelech there is the one who, you know, they go through this business of Sarah is my sister, not my wife, and all that. So that's the context of this conversation, is that here's another Avimelech. But they're very different people. Russia, a wicked one. Re'e kavod sha'asa Avimelech la'Avraham. See the honor that Avimelech gave Avraham. Ve'ata amadata v'harakta esachecha shivim isha le'eben achas. You killed 70 men on one stone, all your brothers. Oila oso ha'ish. Woe to that man. And then they quote a pasuk from Koheles. Chofer gumatz bo yipol. You dig a hole, you're going to fall in it. Right? Along the lines of, also, same area. Poreitz geder yishchenu nachash in Mishlei. You break through a fence, you're going to get bit by a snake. So, that's what happens to him. Avhu nalonerag elaba eben. He was killed with a stone. So that's the measure-for-measure experience of Avimelech. So that's in terms of his death there. But here I have to note for you, this is my favorite line in the whole story. Ralbag. Remember, we've seen before that Ralbag likes to give commentary at the end of a story, telling you the lessons you learn. You know, things like, don't harm your enemies if you can avoid it. And lessons. Well, some of them are moral lessons, some of them are practical lessons. Here, he's just too funny. Source number 9. You'll see. Lahodia, the last lesson he learns from this story is Shero Oila Nilchamim Shishmuma Hitkarev Lamakom Shitachin Shikrelahem Bo Nezek. That as a general rule you should keep away from places from which you could be harmed. Even if the enemy are few in number and they are weak. Vahamashal, for example. Shem Yikrivan Shechayil Migdal Hagavoa, if the soldiers get too close to a tall tower, Yekala Sherba Migdal, Vene Matayam Isparva Chalushim, Laziklam, the people in the tower, even if they're small in number and even if they're weak, they'll have an easy time hurting you. For example, Imbaramo Samalayam Avanim Gidalos, by throwing large stones on you. Thank you, Ralbag. The Im Bezula Zemadrim Sheitachin Shezikum Bahem, or they could throw oranges down on you or something else that could hurt you. So, right. Let's keep them from climbing the tower.
Yeah.
But the lesson here is don't get close to the walls of the fortress. Ulazeu mitznaya melchama. He says that's why you have one of the rules of war. Shiyav makom haraui ubaes haraui beemish haraui. Fight the right enemy, right, at the right time, in the right place. Ubaofen haraui, in the right way. Ubashir haraui, in the right measure. Otherwise, you know, this happens. Okay. Last bit, though, is this this business of worrying about being killed by a woman. So, two notes on this. First, Abarbanel, who just says he's a fool, right, in source number 10, he says, What kind of foolishness was this, right? Ki kalav, but he says it for practical reason. He says, ki kalon isha haragasu eino ki'im b'yoso nilcham basadeh im isha yad liyad lo yinake. He says the shame of a woman killing him is if you were fighting her hand to hand in the field. Then you'd say, wow, you weren't strong enough. You were overpowered by a woman. And he uses a pasuk from Mishlei, yad liyad lo yinake. He takes it out of context to make his point. He says, ki sigbar alav isha b'kochav. A woman triumphs over him, so he will be found guilty, so to speak. How could you not have defeated her? Aval kasher min hamigdalya shlichu evan al rosho. But if they're going to throw a stone on his head from the fortress, malanu shiye isha o ish. Who cares whether it's a man or woman? Ma kolon asher bazeh. What shame is there? Why in the world are you obsessing over this? However, Dan Mikra notes, remember Zebah and Salmuna of Midyan? Remember their concern at the end of their lives? Those two generals? Kings? What was their big concern? How did he want them? How did Gideon want Zebah and Salmuna to die? He wanted his son to do it, and they said, "Let it be from the hero." Abimelech is like Midyan. He's all concerned about the image of how he's going to die. The whole business that we said back in the beginning of Perek Vav, right, that we started this whole thing with, where we said that the Midyan causing splintering of the Jews and strife, and this is all here. That's what you're seeing happen here. And then we get to the end of the story. Vayiru pasuk nun hey, sentence 55. Vayiru ish Yisrael ki meis Avimelech. They all saw Avimelech's dead. Vayachu ishlam kamo, and they went home. Yeah, well, that happened. That's it. You know, that Mikra says that the point is they don't go looking for another king, which is probably wise on balance.
No. They don't have any people left.
You would think they would go find Yotam at this point.
Well, whoever's around in the area. Vayashav Elokim Eisra'as Avimelech Asher Asal Aviv LaHarog Yeshivim Echav. And Hashem brought the evil of Avimelech. Yeah, he paid it back, that which he had done to his father, killing the 70 men. And all the evil of Anshei Shechem got brought back on their heads. Yosam ben Yerubal, and Yosam's curse came true. And that is the story of Abimelech. What a story, huh? It depends how you look at it. I mean, it is part of the theme of Shoftim. Remember, what's the most important message in Sefer Shoftim?
Listen to God or you'll die.
Everything that happens to you, good or bad, is fundamentally coming upon you from God. It is, you know, as we've said before, and as we'll say again, the anti-Megillah
test. Well, chronologically, so did this happen? Because, you know, they get worse and worse. So the so is this before that? Or like,
so we'll have to see where Plegish Megillah fits in chronologically. It does seem pretty bad. I don't remember. I'd have to see when Plegish Megillah is, and it's a good question. We'll pick up with that, God willing.
Thank you.
Next week.